Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 4, Ambarish Maharaj, offended by Durvasa Muni, text number 69. Upayam katiyeshami, tava vipra shuni swatat, ayam yatma vicharaste. Itastam yahi machiram sarushu pratitam teja prahartu kurute shivam upayam. The means of protection in this dangerous position. Katishami, I shall speak to you. Tava, of your deliverance from this danger. Vipra, O Brahmana. Shinushva, just hear from me. Tat, what I say. I am this action taken by you. He, indeed, atma abhichara, self-envy or envious of oneself. Your mind has become your enemy. Tat, or I would say, te, for you. Yataha, because of whom? Tam, rahim. Marj Ambrisha. Yahi, immediately go. Machiram, do not wait even a second, a moment. Sadushu, unto devotees. Prahitam, applied. Teja, power. Prahartu, of the executor. Kurute, does. Ashivam, inauspiciousness. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. O Brahmana, let me now advise you for your own protection. Please hear from me. By offending Maharaj Ambarisha, you have acted with self-envy. Therefore, you should go to him immediately, without a moment's delay. One's so-called prowess, when employed against the devotee, certainly harms he who employs it. Thus, it is the subject, not the object, who is harmed. Purport. A Vaishnava is always an object of envy for a non-devotee, even when the non-devotee happens to be his father. To give a practical example, Aranyakashipu was envious of Prahlad Maharaj, but this envy of the devotee was harmful to Aranyakashipu, not to Prahlad. Every action taken by Aranyakashipu against his son Prahlad Maharaj was taken very seriously by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and thus when Hiranyakashipu was on the verge of killing Prahlad, the Lord personally appeared and killed Hiranyakashipu. Service to a Vaishnava gradually accumulates and becomes an asset for the devotee. Similarly, harmful activities directed against the devotee gradually becomes the ultimate cause of the performer's fall down. Even such a great brahmana and mystic yogi as Durvasa was in a most dangerous situation because of his offense at the lotus feet of Maharaj Ambarisha, a pure devotee. So the translation again. O brahmana, let me now advise you for your own protection. Please hear from me. By offending Maharaj Ambarisha, you have acted with self-envy. Therefore, you should go to him immediately, without a moment's delay. One so-called prowess, when employed against the devotee, certainly harms he who employs it. Thus it is the subject, not the object, who is harmed. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are many examples of personalities who had offended devotees and the problems that they themselves got. And one example given here is Hiranyakashipu. Prahlad Maharaj was trying to give him good instruction, but Hiranyakashipu had his own idea what good instruction is. Most people think good instruction is how to make money and enjoy sense gratification. That's why Hiranyakashipu had his name. Hiranya means gold, and Kashipu means soft bed for sense gratification. So Hiranyakashipu was only interested in instructions how to get gold and enjoy sense gratification. As a matter of fact, according to Bhagavad Gita, 99.9% of the people in this world, that's what they're interested in. Chintyam aparayam cha pralayantam upashitya kama papoga paramam etavam iti nischita asha pashishitarabhara kama krodha parayana ihanti kama bogartha anye narata sanjaya. They believe that to gratify the senses unto the end of life is the prime necessity of human civilization, and therefore there can be no measurement for their anxiety. Being bound by hundreds and thousands of desires, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. So most people don't realize who they are, first of all, that we're spiritual beings, and they don't realize even what they're doing. They believe that they're actually the doers of the activities. For instance, I'm moving my arms, and I think these are my arms, and I'm moving them. We don't see the connection between ourselves and Krishna and the material nature. Therefore, in the end of the 13th chapter, Krishna says, Kshetra Kshetra Gyanam Antra Gyana Chakshusha Bhuta Prakriti Moksham Cha Yevidu Yanti Te Param. That one can see the difference between the doers, or the kshetra, the knowers of the field and the field of activities, and know the process of liberation, he can attain the supreme goal. In other words, first of all, we have to recognize we're a spiritual being. Next, we have to recognize that there's a super soul within our heart. Next, we have to recognize that there's a difference between the super soul, ourselves, and the material nature. Next, we have to see what is the connection between myself and the material nature and the super soul. Then we can actually make some progress in spiritual life. Otherwise, we're more or less following the ways of life, as it says in Bhagavad Gita, and trying to enjoy the three modes. We may think that our activities are devotional, and they could be striving in some way towards devotion, which is also kind of devotional, but without consciousness of what's actually taking place, it's very unlikely we're actually in a mood of devotion. In other words, if we don't recognize where our consciousness is, then it's very unlikely we're going to get the intelligence to put our consciousness in the right place. What I mean by that is that unless we're conscious of things as they are, Krishna consciousness, which in one sense should be very simple, but when our consciousness becomes mixed up with the material nature, it becomes complicated. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Dhyayato Visham Pumsam. If we're looking around and we're not seeing Krishna, then we must be seeing something else. That doesn't mean that everyone we look at, we see holding a flute with a peacock feather in his or her head. Just like Kamsa was so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that every place he looked, all he saw is Radha and Krishna and Balaram. And therefore, when his two wives came before him, he took out his sword and said, now I'm going to kill you, Krishna Balaram. He saw his wives as Krishna Balaram. They said, wait a second, Kamsa, we're not your Krishna Balaram, we're your wives. Oh, innocent mistake, you know. Anyone could mistake you for Krishna Balaram. We're not talking about that. That's quite deep absorption in Krishna consciousness. We're just talking about seeing something beyond ordinary vision, being able to remember that everyone is at least Krishna's servant and that they have different bodies. That's the minimum. That's the, as it says, by Chanaka Pandit, Matrivat Paradareshu Paradwareshu Losrivat Atmavat Sarabhuteshu Yakpashiti Sapandita. Only when we come to the human form of life do we give up this idea that everything is meant for my enjoyment. All the property I see is potentially mine. And especially the things I want, that's what I should try to get, because they'll make me happy. And everyone is meant for my sense gratification. That if someone is helping me my sense gratification, then they're considered to be worthy of my respect. They consider worthy of my, at least, appreciation. And anyone who's not helping me my sense gratification, they're useless at best, and at worst, they're my enemy. Therefore, everyone is looked at as a piece of bubble gum that we might chew for a while, and if we don't like it, when the sugar goes out, then we just spit it out. Much the same as the example of the cow in the street with the sugar cane. He picks it up and chews on it for a while. The sugar cane that's been squeezed out, most of the sugar, but there might be something left. So he squeezes it on, he chews on it, and then when there's no more sugar, he just spits it out. So that's material life. I love you, which means I would like to chew you for a while. When I get all the juice out of you, I spit you out, find someone else to chew on. So as long as in Vedic culture, human culture, religious culture, was meant to stop thinking that people are just meant for me to chew on, when I get tired of them, then I spit them out. That's modern society. They think they're making progress, giving up all religious principles, all regulations, all sense of duty, and therefore just go and find anyone on the street and chew on them for a while. And if you don't like the way they take, if there's no more sugar at, then just spit them out. And if there's a few byproducts, you know, like children or other things, and spit them out too. So this is not even animal society. Even animals don't do that. They're bound by the laws of nature. We don't find that the lion gets tired of the cubs and says, hey, kids, go find, go out. You haven't learned how to hunt? Well, practice makes better. Even the lion takes care of his cubs. For human form of life, they've lost their intelligence because they're stuck and simply contemplating the objects of the senses on the animal level and seeing what I can chew on for a while and what I should spit out. So they're contemplating the objects and lust develops because material nature bestows lust upon the living entity. When he forgets Krishna, then the living entity is desiring to enjoy the material nature, but there's nothing in the material nature to enjoy. It's just a bunch of, Krishna's energies combined together that are, with different material properties like earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. There's nothing really to relish. If you found a bag on the street full of earth, water, fire, air, and whatever, and it had the right shape, would you take it home and say, oh, I love you? But in the material concept of life, that's what people are doing. They're playing around with each other in the name of so-called love, which is only there because lust has made it appear that something is attractive or beautiful. Because and why does lust? Because there is some satisfaction of lust when it's actually the senses meet their objects. Temporarily, there's alleviation from the anxiety over trying to gratify our senses. And that's called happiness. And it goes on. From there comes greed. From there comes frustration when we can't satisfy our greed. And then delusion, then forgetfulness. And then we lose our intelligence. Spiritual intelligence. People think intelligence is how to build a better mousetrap. That's not intelligence. How to kill more mice. Real intelligence is how to chant Hare Krishna to the mouse and get him to become a devotee. That's real intelligence. That's the intelligence Krishna is trying to give us. But people don't want to listen to Krishna or his devotee. Like Aranyakashipu, Prahlad Maharaj told him, Tat sadu manye suryavarya dehinam sadasambhudvigna dhyama satgraha. Now we may think, well, Prahlad Maharaj, if he had any intelligence, he wouldn't have preached to his father. He was a big demon. He would have known he was going to get into difficulty. You tell that if you feed a snake milk, then it'll simply increase its poison. Milk and banana, of course, snakes like milk. They like bananas too. So you feed a snake milk and banana, it's just simply its poison will increase. So why do it? Why did Prahlad Maharaj waste his time telling his father the truth? Because Prahlad Maharaj was only 5 years old. He didn't know, you know, when someone asks you a question, you're supposed to lie and be diplomatic. That's what his teachers, Samarka and Sanandana, that's what they were trying to teach him, how to be diplomatic. But Prahlad didn't know that. Now we may say he had to learn the hard way. But Prahlad Maharaj, he already learned the highest truth, and he didn't really care. He told the truth. That my dear father, Tat Sadu Mangne, Suryavarya Dehinam, oh, best of the big demons, he knew his father was a demon. Asura, against Krishna. I mean, his father never hid it. He never saw his father chanting japa. He never saw his father go to the temple and bow down before Vishnu. All he heard was bad words about Vishnu. So Prahlad knew he was a demon. But he also noticed that such demons like Aranyakashipu, Tat Sada Manye Suryavari Deinam, Sadat Sumid. Samudvigna Dhyama Satgraha. He also saw Samudvigna. He was full of anxiety. After all, Hiranyakashipu was always drinking, getting intoxicated. Now, if he was so powerful that even the demigods were afraid of him, why was he drunk all the time? What was he afraid of? Why was he drunk if he was, you know, he had thought he had solved his problem, that he was never going to die? Everyone was bowing down before him. He had nice food every day, maybe not offered to Vishnu, but it was the best that they had. Why was he always drunk? Because he was full of anxiety. Because anyone who's not Krishna conscious, doesn't matter how long they're going to live. They're going to be full of anxiety. There'll be something to be anxious about. Sada samud vigna diyam Asatgraha, because his consciousness was absorbed in the temporary. And the temporary is always changing. Even if he thought he was going to live forever, everything that he was living for was going to disappear anyhow. So therefore Prahlad Maharaj told him, give up everything, go to the forest and chant Hare Krishna. But this is not what Hiranyakashipu was asking Prahlad. Just like we may give a class, people may come to the class. I mean, I remember one time it was one of the first classes I heard Prabhupada giving public. It was in Buffalo in 1969. Prabhupada came there in the beginning of 69. And we arranged, not me, I didn't arrange it, but the temple president arranged for classes at the university. And we had a big hall called Norton Hall. And Prabhupada came. I remember Prabhupada walked in. I was in Brahman realization because of his presence. And there were many students there. There were actually hundreds of students who came because Swamis were in at that time. Were people wanted to see who Swami was. Maybe he could float in the air or something, or give, you know, benedictions, and everyone would become, you know, mystically elevated. So they came because the Swami was coming. And Prabhupada started to talk. And, well, first Prabhupada played the mridanga, which is one of the few times I saw Prabhupada play the mridanga after his heart attack. But they had kirtan. Everyone stayed for the kirtan. And then Prabhupada started to talk about God and love of God. And at least, you know, 70% of the audience got up and left. I mean, to say the word, if you use four-letter words at that time, it was respectable. You were a gentleman. But if you say the word God in public, people would turn red and embarrassed and walk out. They'd cover their ears. Oh, I heard that nasty word. Start chanting, Harani Kashyapu, Harani Kashyapu. Save me, Rakhangsa. So they got up and left, and Prabhupada wasn't fazed at all. He just went on with his speaking about God. And I was saying, Prabhupada, don't you realize, you know, people don't want to hear about God. But that's the only reason why Prabhupada came. So maybe someone wanted to hear about God. At least his disciples didn't get up and leave. They wanted to hear about God. So Prahlad didn't stop. He told him the truth. You know, tat sara manye suryavari deinam sadasu mudvigna diyama sakraha hidvatma patam griham andakupam. Just get up. You're in the blind well of sense gratification. You're not happy. What do you mean I'm not happy? Want to go out and fight, kid? I'm completely peaceful and happy. Give me some more liquor. Atmatvaputam griham andukupam. Vanam kato yad darim ashri. Take shelter of Vishnu. So Prahlad, Harani Kashyapu, threw Prahlad off his lap and ordered that he be killed. He did. That's the last thing Harani Kashyapu wanted to hear. So similarly, we have to see where our consciousness is. Oh, Harani Kashyapu, boo. Where's our consciousness? How much do we really want to hear about we shouldn't be hankering and lamenting, that we should be worshiping Krishna? Because it's our offenses against others, believe it or not. I don't offend any devotee. Matter of fact, as soon as my devotees come, I immediately leave. That way I never offend anyone. No, as soon as we forget Krishna, our life is offensive in some way or another. As soon as we forget Krishna, then in some way or another, we're trying to become the Lord of material nature, Lord of something. And therefore, we become envious of those who are trying to tell us what to do, and we become envious of those who don't listen to us when we tell them what to do. So as soon as we want to become the Lord and the enjoyer in this material world, we become envious when we become offensive. It may be very subtle. We may do it in such a way as that people actually think we're quite advanced. We're gentlemen or ladies. But it's just a game. It's just a game of enviousness. Let me see if I can allure you and gratify my senses with you. Sure, I'll let you do that so I can allure you and gratify my senses with you. All in the name of love. But that's how the material world works. And unless we become conscious of Krishna, unless we're actually engaged steadily in devotional service with enthusiasm, then we'll come into the platform of materialistic life and our relation with others is going to be deficient in some way. We won't get the nectar, the satisfaction we're looking for, and therefore we'll think, there's no sugar in this relationship. Go away. You're not making me happy. You're useless. Instead of, I'm trying to make you happy by giving you Krishna, and therefore you're the object of my service rather than my object of exploitation. But that takes to become here and understand and try to apply within our lives. We may not get the full character of a pure devotee as soon as we walk, wherever we go, we carry Krishna in our heart. But at least we should make progress towards that. And that depends upon our relationships with the material nature. And ultimately, the material nature is supposed to be utilized in service to Krishna, service to Krishna's devotees, service to the innocent, and we're supposed to take the material nature away from the non-devotees if we can and use it in Krishna's service. So it's a relationship ultimately, but it also entails utilizing Krishna's energies in Krishna's service for Krishna's pleasure, which means to help devotees become more Krishna conscious, help the innocent, and not feed the enviousness of the demons unnecessarily. And if we try to do that, we give up contemplating the objects and we put Krishna consciousness there, that this is an object of my service rather than an object of my sense gratification. So it's difficult. Therefore, there's household life. So man and woman can get together in Krishna consciousness, try to become Krishna conscious, try to realize how they're trying to exploit each other all the time, and try to substitute Krishna consciousness so that gradually the relationship turns spiritual. Not that now we're married and we have a vacation for 25 years in Maya. That was also an ashram. It's an attempt to utilize that opportunity to stop seeing only the external world, the body of the woman, the body of the man, the things that they can give me, but to try to see them as an object of service. The children is an object of service. Even the pets is an object of service, in Krishna's service. Then the relationship becomes sweet because it's based on Krishna consciousness. Then everything turns spiritual, including the wife, the children, the home, everything. In the presence of Krishna, everything becomes tasty and spiritual. And without service to Krishna, without enthusiastic service to Krishna, everything becomes material, and simply an attempt for exploitation until the sugar is out and we spit it out. And the result is, sometimes we hear about Hiranyakashipu offending Prahlad, or we hear about Ramachandra Khan offending Haridas Thakur, or offending Lord Nityananda, and we think all these people are rascals. They are rascals, and we're also rascals. Otherwise, we wouldn't be in the material world too, along with all these other rascals. But we have the opportunity to become devotees, and therefore to stop being rascals. And as much as we become devotees, we stop being rascals. And we shouldn't forget there's a part of us that is also the little Hiranyakashipus within us, directing us. So we should be careful that we don't think we're on the top and everyone else has, these people are rascals, asuras, and I'm a pure devotee. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Or I should say, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, by the mercy of the association, sincere devotees, we're learning to become devotees. But we have to utilize that intelligence being given to us through our acharyas, through our teachings, and apply it within our lives, not only grossly, but also subtly, so that we actually start seeing everyone and everything related to Krishna, and therefore develop the mentality of a devotee. That will be given to us, the Dhammi Bodhi Yogam Tam. When Krishna sees that's what we're trying to do, then he gives us the intelligence to do it even better and make advancement in becoming more and more of a devotee of the devotees and more of Krishna's devotee. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Khwala. Any questions? Yes.
So there's a question on internet from...
Well, there's one question here, too. We'll take the live questions first.
Thank you for an inspiring lecture. I just wanted to ask you what are the main sources of power that can empower us in order to resist Hiranyakashipu in us? So where can we get the power to resist the alluring of Hiranyakashipu within us?
Tasmat agara sambhutam ritstam jnana chidatmanaha chidvayanam samshayam yogam atishto tishtabharata. These doubts which have arisen in your heart out of ignorance, O Arjuna, should be slashed with the weapon of knowledge. Armed with yoga, O Bharata, stand and fight. That's chapter 4, text number 40. I think it's 42. In other words, transcendental knowledge. If we're hearing from Krishna, Bhagavad Gita, and his representatives, if we're seeing things through those eyes, then even Maya comes and tells us something, we won't listen to it. We'll be able to see Maya, what she's telling us in relationship to Krishna consciousness, and we won't be attracted to it. Because Maya is also... Maya doesn't have so many tricks. She's just saying that you're this body, and you're great, you don't have to listen to anyone, just try to enjoy in some way. That's all she's saying. And Krishna is saying, you're not this body. You're not the controller, you're not the enjoyer, you're not everyone's friend, you're my simple, eternal servant. So try to follow me, that's all. Okay, Sri Devi.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the class. The very first line, you know, where Srila Prabhupada writes, even if the father is, even if the son is a devotee and the father is non-devotee, he becomes envious of his own son. So I was just reflecting at that very moment about my relationship with my father. He's a materialist, and because there's a biological relationship, I talk to him and I tell him about Krishna and I try to explain something about devotional service, and it seems as though he's just humoring me, because after some time he will suddenly say something that makes me realize he just wants to exploit me. Sign on this form so I can put money here, so I can do this. So he sees me as his daughter to be used for his own schemes, and I see him as my father, and so I'm trying to help him become Krishna conscious. So it's like a tug of war. And sometimes I wonder whether there's any point in going on like this.
No, there's no point. You're wasting your time. It's called preaching to the unfaithful. You know, it's called preaching to the unfaithful. It's one of the offenses against the holy name. Hmm. I mean, three times you can try it. And then after that, it's just a waste of time. It becomes called material sentiment. Mm. Oh, I'm so such a nice devotee, I'm so powerful, you know. Eventually he'll get the message because, you know, of my potency or whatever.
Mm.
But it doesn't work that way. Better to try to relate to him in reality rather than, you know. It doesn't mean that you tell him, you're my dear father, you're a dog or a cat or a hog. It means you act realistically towards him. Rather than waste your breath trying to preach to him, stop it.
Mm.
Find some common interest and don't allow him to exploit you.
Mm. But that's the thing. What's the common interest for me? It's only Krishna. I mean, there's nothing else for me except to talk about Krishna.
Well, if you're such an advanced pure devotee, then Krishna will give you the intelligence what to tell him.
Oh, billions of lifetimes I'll have to wait for that. So,
if you ask Krishna for the intelligence, then just like my mother, she had no interest at all in Krishna consciousness. She had some, you know, she believed in astrology or whatever, or Ayurveda, completely on the mundane platform. She believed in fairies or something. So one time she, after like 50 years of being in the movement, 40 years or something, one day she asked me, she said, "What do you believe?" And then she said, no, no, don't tell me, I'm not. The closest she ever got to becoming inquisitive. So I never talked to her about anything about Krishna consciousness. We just talked about one thing we agreed on, was health.
Oh.
She was completely into health, you know.
Okay.
What kind of nutrients to take and things like that, what kind of exercise to do. She was completely into nothing else. Mm-hmm. So that's all I ever talked to her about.
Right.
Why should I waste my time?
Right. Thank you for that tip, Guru Maharaj. Appreciate it.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Maharaj. Yeah. I would like to share my experience with my father. So about more than 9 years ago, my father wanted to throw me out of apartment. I lived with my parents at that time. And I was bringing home prasadam and sharing with my parents and giving them prasadam. And after a few years, my father came to my temple that I'm coming from Rijeka, and we did service in temple. We did electrification of temple, and he did the service for Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra also. So, but he got a lot of prasadam. And he said when we were on festivals, we were taking home Charanamrita, and I said to him, here is nice juice, please take it. And he was drunk, and he said, it is the best beverage that I have ever drink it, and I could drink it every day. So I said, yes, yes, next life, the best. So just I advise to everyone, when there is someone with the same trouble, I say, just bring your parents prasad. Prasadam will soften the heart, and then preaching could come on. That is my experience.
Good, thank you. We have a question from the internet.
So there's a question from Bhakti Yoga Tilburg. He says, Hare Krishna Maharaj, question, why are there innumerable spiritual planets? Why does not everyone eventually go back to Krishna Loka if that is the highest?
Well, not everyone wants to go to Krishna Loka. We have an eternal rasa. It may be in Vaikuntha, or maybe in Ayodhya. It might be in Dwarka. Why would we want to go to some place that we wouldn't fit in? Hanuman wouldn't fit in very well in Goloka Vrindavan. Could you imagine? There's a rasa dance and Hanuman's trying to fit in. This wouldn't work. So everyone has their relation with Krishna, and they should go where they fit in. They want to go where they fit in. And the ecstasy and the love is unlimited in all these places. It's like the Himalayas. There may be Mount Everest, there may be some mountain which is, you know, some meters less than Mount Everest, but for us it's all about the same. Does that answer the question?
Yes, that's the answer. Okay. Hare Krishna, thank you.
Is that the only question?
That's the only question, yes.
Khwala, Grantaraj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.